Blog Talk Radio.
Well, welcome everyone. This is Hidden Mysteries, and I'm Mimi. And for all of you fellow explorers of the unexplained, this is a new episode of Hidden Mysteries where we'll be talking about fascinating old legends and mysterious concepts and unexplained mysteries. This is December 7th, 2016, coming to you from the New York area. And I have with me Reverend Maria. How are you doing, Maria?
Wonderful. Yay. We get to talk about new things.
Yes, we're going to have another lovely discussion. Reverend Maria. Yeah. Reverend Maria is an internationally known psychic from Budapest, Hungary, and a European shaman. She is a published author of many, many books, a spiritual life coach, metaphysical practitioner, and a public speaker who has traveled to many places to speak on spiritual, psychic, and paranormal topics. Check out Maria's website at mariadeandrea.com, or you can get in touch with her at 631-559-1248. Again, that's 631-559-1248. For those who would like to call in and ask any questions about today's topic, the number is 929-477-1080. The myths and legends of creatures and beings from interdimensional worlds has always fascinated and triggered our imagination, creating comic books, cartoons, and heroic movies for decades. What if they really did exist? What if they actually still walk among us even to this day? Fascinated with unicorns or old Nessie or elementals or perhaps the ancient gods and goddesses and the like, could all of the ancient writings and cave drawings from the past been correct? Well, Reverend Marie and I are going to talk about this and take a walk through the ages as we explore these fantastical beings of old. Maria, you co-authored a book titled Mythical, Magical Beasts and Beings, which is just perfect for today's topic, and you stated that they are all around us still, perhaps on interdimensional levels of consciousness. Do you want to talk about that?
Exactly. Well, first of all, I look at it as these mythical and magical beings have been with us in all our myth stories in the Bible, as well as found basically in the ancient art form. People just don't think about it like that. So dating back to the cave drawings, we see pictograms of what we've considered mythological beasts, and actually even alien figures and interdimensional beings. Unicorns, as an example, have been found on tapestries, also in caves. And, you know, you and I were talking about it a couple of days ago. It's really funny because people are always trying to find some mammal or some animal that fits the situation for a unicorn. And they say, no, this is what it really was. It couldn't possibly be a unicorn. This is what they were actually seeing. And it's really funny because different cultures saw the same thing. So, maybe it was real at that time. We do have a lot of animals and different beings that are actually out of existence nowadays. So I don't see it's not a possibility, right?
Exactly.
And they have always been, they have always been water spirits, and they're found practically in every culture, don't you think?
Yeah. You know, and in light of the premiere of J.K. Rowling's Fantastic Beasts, which, by the way, is a great movie, so anybody's interested in these movies, go out, you know, and see it. And, you know, if you're into Harry Potter, this is a great movie. I thought we would take a look at the mythical beings we've read about through our own history. Remnants of such creatures and beings are seen, as you said, you know, in our artwork, our stories, movies, even drawings left on the walls of caves thousands of years ago. We've weaved such ideas into our complex imagination, but what if they had actually existed at one time or may still move among us through, you know, though on interdimensional levels of existence? Can anyone really say for sure that they were nothing but mere folklores thought up through our pure imagination? Maria, since you're from Hungary, I'm sure you have some tales of such creatures from your own neck of the woods to tell.
Oh, sure. Actually, this one's really funny. I was thinking that there's a story in Hungary called The Sister of the Dragon. And the whole point with the stories is to let you know what's mythical, what's out there, what was out there, to get your imagination going a little bit. But this one is basically dealing with the spirit, soul, metallic, mercury. So it really has learning experiences in it, for lack of a better word. And the point of this story is to let people know that if they really wish hard and they work on things, that they can make things happen. So in ancient Europe, the story goes that there was a wizard who conjured a dragon to aid in speeding up his ability to gain favor in the court of the king. So they looked at it as he was a good wizard, and he was very positive, and he always helped people, and he only wanted to help people. And then, you know, they describe what he looked like, which we can kind of skip. We don't have all night for it. And he spent the usual amount of days and nights getting ready to conjure the dragon. And then when he did conjure the dragon asked, you know, what he would want, and he explained that he just wanted to be part of the king's court so that he can help more people and to better everybody's life. So the dragon explained to him that his sister is better at it. So eventually, the wizard conjured the sister of the dragon, still a dragon. So he proceeded to conjure him, and according to the story, she came in like a whirlwind, and she came in so quickly that she came in at the end of his conjuring. She was already there. And she asked the wizard what he wanted, and he explained that he wanted the people to do better, and he wanted to be part of the court because of that and to help the king make better decisions. She told him that he needed to close his eyes and really, really focus hard on what he wants and where he wants to be, you know, in the court, and not to open his eyes until she was gone. So when she left and he opened his eyes, he was standing next to the king. Everything came to fruition, so he could help people, and, you know, he made the country better, and he really was from the heart. And years later, the dragon showed up and said to him that the reason that she was willing to help him was because she could see into his heart, and because he was ethical and had integrity and truly wanted to help people from the heart, that's why she helped him. Because if he wasn't doing that, and he was just playing a game so that he could have his ego and not really follow through with what he was saying, because she's a dragon, she would have burned him to death.
Wow.
Okay, that'll teach you to tell the truth and to try to be honest. And it also tells you that if you're wishing for something, you know, you really need to make it something really, really positive. Because part of it scares kids a little bit because they're supposed to be good. But part of it is really teaching them that they have to be careful what they wish for and that they're supposed to be walking on a positive path. So a lot of the stories have these little side effects of learning. But in Hungary, they also look at it as there were real dragons. Now, sometimes some people connect them to the dinosaur era. You know, we just look at it as, look, there were dragons, they were mythical, they helped us rip up.
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting that dragons have always been like a popular myth. Theories as to what inspired stories of dragons include like lost crocodiles or dinosaur bones. That's where the megalania comes in, and an ancient relative of the Komodo dragon that terrorized the aboriginals of Australia. And it grew to lengths of about like 26 feet and weighed about 4,300 pounds. And its poisonous saliva contained a blood thinner that caused its victims to bleed to death. So, you know, these are some of the places where they got the idea. I mean, some people think that, you know, some of these stories might have had something to do with the dragon, the myth of the dragon. It's not clear when or where stories of dragons first emerged, but the huge flying serpents were described by the ancient Greeks and the Sumerians. And for much of history, dragons were thought of as being like any other exotic animal, sometimes useful and protective, other times harmful and dangerous. And that changed when Christianity spread across the world. Dragons took on a decidedly sinister interpretation. And in medieval times, most people who heard anything about dragons knew them from the Bible. And in Leviathan, what appears to be a dragon is described in detail in the book of Job, with flames streaming from its mouth and sparks of fire shooting out, making smoke pouring from its nostrils. And the word dragon comes from the ancient Greek word draconta, I believe it is, meaning to watch, suggesting that the dragon guards valuables. Dragons typically guard treasure such as mountains of gold, coins, or gems. So you can see where, you know, how myths, like the myth of the dragons, for instance, sort of weaved its way into different cultures, you know, at different times and different periods.
You know, it really makes you stop and think, too, in reality, well, both realities. You know, when you think of a raven, you know, and you look at a raven's nest, a lot of times they have jewels and watches and all sorts of things in it just because they like shiny things. So that might be connected to the dragons originally because maybe that attracted them. You know,
right.
It's a little hoarding thing. Okay. But there are also stories of astral beings. And, you know, we all travel astrally when we're in our sleeping state, in our dream state. And some of us consciously do astral travel, astral projection. And actually, there's a really old, old story in Hungary about a magic castle. And the story goes that there were these two children that got lost. It's already telling you children should be careful and not get lost, right?
Right.
Always going to prove a point, you know. So the brother and sister were walking through the forest because they were lost, and they came across a clearing, and in the clearing they saw this giant chicken leg. Now, sometimes in the stories it'll say there's three, sometimes it's one, and on top of that was a castle that was spinning. And, you know, it goes into how gorgeous the castle is and what it looks like in more detail. And the children were mesmerized and they were feeling at peace and they really wanted to go inside, but it was spinning too fast. So they looked at it as once they're inside, even though they were lost, they would still be calmer, they'd be happy, and they knew that once they went in, their wishes would come true. So they were holding hands, and they had a very, very strong urge to close their eyes and to really wish that they could be in the castle. And as soon as they did that, a drawbridge came down, it stopped spinning, and they were able to go up into the castle. And they had this gigantic door at the opening of the castle gates, and it opened for them. And basically the story goes that they went inside, and they knew that any wish they had would be granted. So they got two wishes. The first wish was that they could go home because they were lost. And we never knew what the second wish was because they say that's a personal thing when you make a wish. So when they opened their eyes, you know, when they opened their eyes again, all of a sudden they were home. And the story is that if you really wish hard enough, and you work on it, because remember, they walked into the castle. If you focus on what you're really wishing for and you really work hard on it, you're non-limited and all your wishes can come true. What I like is the part where they say that you still have to work on it.
Interesting.
Yeah, because it's teaching you. A lot of times they put parts of mythological creatures together with physical castles and all sorts of things, but everything was magic. However, some of the stories have come down, like that one has come down for hundreds of years. So there had to be some base. We really look at it as there was a base of some gigantic animal that looked a little bit like that without the castle part. You know, some of the myths come down through ancient times, and if you look at some of the cave drawings, you know, it's amazing what they actually have on there.
And
these stories, like I said, they've been passed down forever, and then they're talking about water and fire spirits among other elemental beings. And basically, they're not just in the Hungarian culture, they're pretty much in every culture, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, because, you know, when I was doing some research, I was noticing that there were quite a number of, like, magical water spirits in mythological stories. Like, there was one that was called the Kappa, which is from ancient Japan, and it was a water demon that inhabits rivers and lakes and devours disobedient little children. Here again, it's like they try to find a way to get rid of the bad ones. And the Kappa was a word meaning river child, and is usually depicted with the body of a tortoise, a beak, and the limbs of a frog, and has a hollow filled with water on top of his head. And then there was also, you know, naturally Loch Ness Monster, which is like one of the most famous ones, that's said to inhabit Scotland's Loch Ness. And the first sighting was reported in 1933, and since then, you know, many locals and tourists have claimed to see something in the cold, deep water. According to some believers, Nessie is a large marine reptile from the age of dinosaurs. Despite occasional reports and doctored photos and scientific investigations, it's hard, you know, it's the evidence is still, you know, hard to really pinpoint the reality of little Nessie. But here in America, we have Champ, which is comparable to a Loch Nessie. I want to call it Loch Nessie. you know, which is a mysterious lake monster said to live in Lake Champlain, sometimes referred to as America's Loch Ness Monster. And Champ comes in many forms, but it is said to have several humps. He has dozens of long feet, and has dark skin and a head like a snake or a dog. I guess it all depends on what day of the month you're looking at it. The famous 1981 photo of Champ was later revealed to be a floating log, but Champ's legend is kept alive by, you know, occasional sightings, and unfortunately the ambiguous photo, which nobody, you know, always looks out of focus, just like the Loch Ness Monster photos. You know, I just wish, well, you know, on the one hand, it's like I'd hate to have to bring the public's eye so much to all these beings, because, you know, I'm sure they need their privacy too, you know. But on the other hand, it would be nice to really get hard physical evidence. But then again, humans will never believe, so it doesn't matter what you bring. Even all those alien pictures, nobody ever believes anyway. It's not gonna mean anything.
Yeah, I was gonna say, that's like in the other countries. There's so many countries that are very definite that there are UFOs. Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people have seen them, and we'll also go, I don't know if there are UFOs. That you and I feel like there is, obviously, but
yeah,
you know, a lot of people are still very skeptical, and there've been sightings everywhere for centuries.
Yep, I know.
But I know that's like in ancient times. All different cultures have elves. It's just that they're spiritual beings, and a lot of times, just because somebody can't see it, like Nessie,
right,
if they can't see it, they don't believe in it. And, you know, we have different realms of existence. It's just a matter of some people that, you know, I do readings, and sometimes I can see things that I have to remember everybody else isn't seeing. And if I mention it, they're going to lock me up, depending on where I am when I see that thing. But I have a funny story about an elf. A friend of mine, who's also, you know, psychic, we were hanging out, and we were going to paint my living room. You know how it is. Sometimes you get bored. So we're painting the living room. We're on the third day now, right? We're on the third day of painting. And, you know, we're both getting a little tired, but, you know, we're wired at the same time. And I look over. He's painting this one wall. And I look over, and his brush strokes are going. He's going up. And when he comes down, he makes kind of like an arc. And he doesn't come all the way down to the floor anymore. So he's going up, and then he comes down. He's making the arc. After a while, I said to him, I said, what are you doing? So he says to me, and he was a little annoyed, and he says to me, look, he says, there's an elf running up and down, one of your guys. He says, either send him home or give him a paintbrush. I'm tired. So he said every time he was making the arc, he was trying not to hit the elf on the head.
Well, maybe the elf didn't like the color.
Yeah, that could be too. And it was really funny because, you know, he kept going in this little arc, and I'm like, what are you doing? But yeah. I thought it was funny. Hand him a paintbrush or send him home. And then people think of elves in all different, like, sizes. They always think they're all one size or they're all the other. The ones that my friend and I have seen in different locations are about maybe 3 feet tall. That doesn't mean that they don't have different size elves. People always think it's always going to be one size, but that just like nature spirits, you have different types. Okay. And we really laugh at it because if you look at all men or all women or all humanity, they're not all the same size. Why would an elves all be the same size, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And if you look at, you know, like comic books or Star Trek, or mythological magical beings and situations basically have some level of reality. Because as you and I were saying earlier, before the show, if you really look at Star Trek and they had those little phone things to beam up before the cell phones. And now when we look, we have cell phones.
Absolutely.
So if you look at the comic strips and some of the really old... That's like the rocket ships were in the movies before they actually built one, you know, to go up. Not that they might not have already been working on one, but according to the public, they weren't.
The silent film trip to the moon. That was like decades, way before anybody even was able to get to the moon. And here they were already like trying to figure out on film how to do it. You know, it was really fascinating when you really have to think about it, you know. But, I mean, when you were talking about interdimensional beings, I was thinking about Bigfoot because I started to realize that one of the reasons why we don't always see Bigfoot and that they're always not around so that people are constantly having sightings of them is because they have the ability to go into different dimensions. They can walk in and out of different dimensions, you know.
Which is probably the only thing saving them.
That's right. That's right.
Because sometimes people go, oh, why aren't the UFOs landing in the middle of Washington, D.C.? And I'm saying, let's see. They're going to come to Earth. They're going to say hi. We're going to dissect them. Why would they get off the ship?
Jay, not enough motivation there.
Yeah, right?
But you don't
get off the ship.
I know. You know, there have been so many stories of unusual animals, like the griffin, for instance. The griffin is a legendary creature with the head and the wing of the wings of an eagle and the body, tail, and the hind legs of a lion. That was considered like a powerful and majestic creature. And during the Persian Empire, the griffin was seen as a protector for evil, witchcraft, and slander. So griffins were most common in the art. And the art and mythology of ancient Greece, for instance, and in ancient Egypt, dating back to the 4th century BC. You know, on the island of Crete in Greece, for instance, archaeologists have uncovered depictions of griffins in frescoes in the throne room of the Bronze Age Palace of Knossos, dating back to the 15th century BC. Were we mentioning unicorns before? I'm not even sure, but they should be mentioned because they're really, the well-known tapestry from the 1500s found at the Cloister Museum depicts a unicorn captured in a fence having been hunted down in order to kill it. Unicorns were a sign of purity and grace and drawn to virgins. Greek writers of natural history were convinced of the reality of unicorns, which they located in India. Its horn was said to have the power to render poisoned water potable and to heal sickness. So, you know, you really think, you know, like, you know, all these beings, for people to have, I mean, let's face it, man isn't that imaginative. So they had to have had something to...
Right?
Fuel and inspire a lot of these stories. So I just think that, like you said earlier, that a lot of these beings, I mean, well, on one hand, a lot of these beings aren't around anymore. So that's one thing. But also, a lot of them are on other dimensions. And, you know, unfortunately, we don't think of any other dimension except the one that we're in, but we really need to start thinking about that because they're all around us. But, you know, so what's your last words on this?
Well, just really quickly, I did want to say, though, that if you look at all different cultures that have some of the same mythical creatures, even if they are called by different names, you have to remember that when the mythical story started, they didn't travel to see each other. They weren't going by airplanes or ships or boats. So the cultures were totally separate from each other, and yet they still came up with the same mythical creatures. So there has to be some kind of a base, I would think. Because why would they all see the same thing? Yeah.
Right. The only thing I can think of is Atlantis, because they were able to travel around because they had some balloons and other types of devices to travel around. But this was before the world sort of like died and came back. So, you know, because we had like a reset right after the flood. So, and a lot of the things that we found archaeologically are obviously from the point when we began again, right after Atlantis, because otherwise we wouldn't have found a lot of the stuff, I would think, you know. So, you know, I can't say
like
for sure
said,
because, yeah.
But like you said, some of the stories are so old because they're Atlantis, they're Mu, which is pre-Atlantis. And,
right.
you know, when you think of, you know, except for they might have been able to travel at that time, and I really think they did at a distance and by air.
Yeah.
However,
yeah.
The fact that countries and cultures were so far apart at the time, yes, they still came up with some of the same beings, you know, same beasts, the same beings, the same magical creatures. And some of them, if you really look at the drawings, the cave drawings, they actually look like spacemen with a helmet.
Right.
You know, and sometimes I look at some of the stories that have been passed down through ancient times, and there's this little point we go, you can't make this stuff up.
No, definitely not.
In the cultures for something not to exist that at least had the same base.
Absolutely. So you have any last parting words before we close up shop for this evening?
I just want to say don't forget to join us again. And we're going to bring some more exciting news to you and different discussions. And until the next time and always, may God bless you abundantly. And thank you for being with us.
Yes, and don't forget, in 2017 is a whole new year of hidden mysteries. So keep listening. Keep sending us ideas for topics. We want to hear from you. You can get us on facebook.com/mquestmedia, or perhaps like leave messages here on Blog Talk, or go to mquestmedia.com on the website, and you can send us an email. You can get in touch with Reverend Maria at mariadeandrea.com or 631-559-1248. Have a nice night. Thank you all for joining us, and we'll see you next time in Hidden Mysteries in the new year. Bye-bye.